Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
Your first mission is to keep yourself happy.
It's living for self that is so exhausting and frustrating because you were made to live for Him. So when you begin to please Him, you begin to thrive. It's not a burden. It's not a duty. It's a joy. I come alive. This is what I was made for.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
I was being sarcastic, which is another big word you'll learn in school.
What's the word on the street?
Recalcitrant. And you have to say it like that if you're going to actually... What would that would anthropomorphize the word? This is Wretched Radio. That's right. I'm obstinately dug in. No apologies from me regarding what? This is not easy to say, and this could cause a great deal of controversy. Oh, my kid. This could cause all kinds of judgment to fall on the House of Wretched. That's right. Sunday morning, I at Alvareta Bible Church, and I'm not going to apologize for it. Friel, it seems like you're being a little tentative about it. I preached a topical sermon. That's
what?
Right. I tried to sort of make it a peg spot, but I'm not sure if anybody was really paying attention. They would notice. Hey, wait, you're not diving in. So here's the deal. Last week, we spent time studying three characters in Matthew chapter 26. You've got yourself a man who loathed Jesus in the person of Caiaphas, despised him, wanted to kill him, plotted secretly, but he was such a political cat, he knew better than to do it during the festival time, unless there be an uproar and his position would be threatened. So he chose the lesser thing. We also saw Judas Iscariot, who was lukewarm toward Jesus. He didn't loathe him, but he didn't love him either, and wedged in the middle. Taken out of chronological order is the story about Mary, who loved Jesus, who went to his feet. Again, she was constantly at his feet. Every time you meet Mary, she's at the feet of Jesus. That's not a bad place to be. She was anointing him for his burial on head and feet, and she used her hair to wipe off the nard from his feet. You talk about an act of submission and love. Why? Because she saw Jesus, and what she saw was superlative. She saw the best of men. She saw one who exceeded and excelled in every regard as a human being. She saw the most, and then just fill in the blank with every positive attribute you can think of, the most compassionate, the most powerful, the most wise, the most comforting, the best teacher. He was the best at everything because he was the best of men. Of course he was. He is the visible image of the invisible God. You would expect then that Jesus Christ is the best of men. She saw Jesus. She loved Jesus. And the encouragement from 2 weeks ago is you'll love him if you stare at him too. In fact, that's not me making stuff up or making up stuff if you're really legalistic about ending a sentence with a preposition. 2 Corinthians 3:18, stare at Jesus with unveiled face. You grow in conformity to his image from one level of glory to another. You'll just love him more and more and more because of what you see. And that was basically the sermon. And I think it rightly classified as expository. But this week's was kind of a little bit more topical because the justification that I used for the exception to the rule is what I believe to be a great need. It seems to me that there are a disproportionate number of Christians who struggle with the issue of love. Love. That was a little better.
It was a lot better.
It was that bad the first time, was it? In two regards. And so I decided to dedicate a sermon to addressing those folks. And I think they are, I was going to say legion, but that's probably in the context of talking biblically, not a really good descriptor. There's lots of them. who struggle with the issue of love from two different angles. And I thought, okay, so we're going to use Mary as one who loved Jesus to springboard into this topical sermon. So, Jimmy, I did my bestest to say it was just a continuation from the week before.
Okay.
So that I wouldn't get tagged for preaching a topical sermon. But you know what? I'll go down in flames preaching a topical sermon about how to know the love of God, to know that you're loved by him, and then to love him in return and how to grow in that. I'll take that hit any day. Because there are so many people, I think there's a group of people, so maybe I just created a third category. I think there's a group of people who struggle to be loved by God, to be loved by him. In fact, this was amazingly profound. Was just visiting with a couple of friends, actually Sunday after church. And he was talking about when he got saved and somebody approached him that was a believer and shared something that maybe you need to hear. It seems that he grew up in a maybe less than loving home. Life was pretty much hard knocks. He gets saved and the older, more mature believer said one of the most difficult things for the new believer, and I would say for a lot of people, because they never assess and address the issue, a most difficult thing is to be loved. Not to love, but to be loved. Because I think that there's a category of Christians that just find it hard, that just they struggle to think that anybody would love them. And that's what makes God's love so staggering, that he doesn't love the lovable, that he doesn't love those that have earned his love, that benefit him in any way. You only love stuff that you get something out of. Now, I'm not saying that's bad. I'm just saying that is. I mean, otherwise, why do you love it? Okay, I'm in the studio and I'm looking. There's a light up against the wall. Some studio light is up against the wall. I don't love it. There it is. I don't love it. Now, right next to it is a humidifier so that I can say, love. Well, now I like that thing a little bit more. Why? Why do I like the humidifier more than the light? Because it's doing something for me. I think I like this cup of tea that I got on my desk even more because I'm drinking it and it tastes good. It benefits me. And that is typically the way we human beings love, but that's not the way God loves. He loves because he loves. He loves because the inter-Trinitarian love is so infinite, so profound. It just spills over the entire universe, which incidentally is the reason he created the universe out of love, because he is love. And he loves even though we're not lovable. And if you struggle with being loved, maybe where you're getting tripped up is in thinking that you haven't done anything to deserve it. I can actually affirm that. You haven't done anything to deserve it. That's what makes it so staggering. And that's what makes it so comforting, that God doesn't love contingently, that he doesn't love because of what you do. He loves you because he loves you. I know that's a profound sentence, but he loves you because he loves you, not because of what you do. So if you come from a background where your parents didn't love you, perhaps you think nobody loves you, your siblings, they're not fond of you, you haven't been able to find a spouse who loves you, well, I've got some great news for you. There is one who loves you, and it's not because you do lovable things. It is just the opposite. It is because you do vile, detestable things. Because he's so rich in loving kindness, he sets his affection on those he chooses. Now that is love. Amazing love, dare I say. How can it be that God would love thee? Okay, I just rewrote the hymn, but it's still the truth. Do you struggle with being loved by God? Because you don't think you're lovable? Here's the key. You're not. You're not. Because we do that, don't we? Well, I'm not very lovable today because I only prayed for 7 minutes. Nope. It doesn't flag. It doesn't waver. It doesn't ebb and flow. God's love is constant. That's why Mary saw Jesus and loved him. because, for instance, Martha, the sister, was not pursuing the best thing, him. And how did Jesus talk to her? You knucklehead, Martha! And he didn't, Martha, Martha. He was loving Martha even when she was not being all that lovable. And then the next character in the three biography story that Matthew links together is Judas. He washed his feet. He knew that this is the one that was going to betray him. And he loved him. Judas wasn't lovable. Neither are you. Neither am I. And yet, God loves us anyway. So to you, I would affectionately say, if you struggle to be loved by God, get over it. And understand that it's constant. You don't have to perform to get it. It has been granted to you. He places it upon you because of the work of his son, Jesus Christ. But there are two other categories of individuals who struggle with being loved by God and loving him in return. I call it the legalistic love dilemma and the mystical love dilemma. It might describe you. Next on Wretched Radio.
You've most likely been there, sitting across from a therapist, staring at their degrees on the wall, listening while they give you a diagnosis and tell you what pill and prescription they think are going to cure all your ills. You walk out of the office carrying a label, and you wonder why you feel even heavier than you did before you walked in. That's why Dr. Greg Gifford wrote Lies My Therapist Told Me, because sometimes it's not the medication or even the diagnosis that's the real issue. It's that the whole system doesn't touch what's going on beneath the surface. Look, not every struggle is solved with a pill. Not every label tells the entire story. What if addiction's not just a disease? What if your anxiety is not just a chemical imbalance? And what if the diagnosis handed to your child is not the final word? The world gives its answers, but rarely does it ever deal with the heart. Scripture does. Pre-order Lies My Therapist Told Me today at fortisinstitute.org/lies. That's fortisinstitute.org/lies.
Perhaps you've been wondering, is there a Christian university that isn't woke or that hasn't compromised on important biblical doctrines like, you know, the age of the earth? There is. It's the Masters University in Southern California. Beautiful campus, all of the athletics and activities that you've come to expect from universities. But it's more than that. The academic programs are most excellent, preparing students for the future. The Washington Post just said, number six for preparing students for the real world. All that. Plus, the Masters University isn't woke, and it is thoroughly biblical. Would you like to learn more? I encourage you to visit the Masters University at masters.edu/wretched, masters.edu/wretched.
Thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. You know, a dollar today doesn't go near as far as it used to. It might buy you a soft drink, but what if your dollars could multiply? For 25 years, our gospel partners have been watching their giving multiply. Every month, their faithful support transforms into college campus evangelism, biblical counseling, marriage restoration, and gospel proclamation across the globe. And when you become an ongoing monthly gospel partner, understand this. You're not just giving money. You're preaching the gospel to a student at Georgia Tech. You're discipling the young man struggling with pornography. And you're equipping a pastor in a small rural church. And the work, it's nowhere near finished. The fields are white for harvest, and your monthly partnership makes it all possible. Join us as an ongoing monthly gospel partner right now by visiting fortisinstitute.org. That's fortisinstitute.org, because when faithful people give faithfully, the gospel advances powerfully. Wretched, amazing grace, amazing gospel.
Important dates in Christian history. 1948, the World Council of Churches is formed as an interdenominational body promoting Christian unity and presence in society. Modern ecumenism saw differing denominations work together in spiritual and social causes, but also resulted in the watering down of Christian doctrine. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Wait, I'm sorry, Jimmy. What exactly was the word?
Recalcitrate.
Close enough. This is Wretched Radio. Recalcitrant.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a verb. To recalcitrate would be to do obstinance. Recalcitrant is you are obstinate, like I am. Refusing to apologize for what I have to confess was a bit of a topical sermon delivered at Alpharetta Bible Church on Sunday. And I really, I'd be willing to take some critical knocks on that. Wait a second. Your website says you do expository preaching. Right. But historically, I've said, and I think my Lutheran friend, I've got Martin Luther to support me in this. Martin Luther said that the preacher who does not address the issue of the day basically isn't worth his salt. He probably said it a little saltier than that. But the pastor who doesn't know that there's something big that is on the heart and mind of everybody and address it in some way, shape, or form, he thought was missing his duty. Now, I know we could say that, well, when the text gets to it, we'll get to it. But I think the shepherd recognizes the needs of the sheep now and can address it if it's important enough. And I can't think of a more important subject than the love of God. Can you? That's what Christianity is about. The love of God. Knowing it, being loved by Him, loving Him, and enjoying Him in return. But here is where there is danger afoot for a number of Christians who struggle with the command of Jesus that said, the number one command is to love the Lord your God with all of your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Because first of all, this would be ditch number one or Christian number one. I guess it's number two. Jimmy, would you please do the math in there? This is Christian number two. That you think that if you are not loving God to the max at this moment, then you're sinning or you're not a Christian. Now, to be sure, you could be sinning if you aren't trying to be faithful to love God as best as you can. That could be. But that probably isn't you. Probably. You are under the impression that if I am not desiring God with all my desires to desiring God, I'm just not doing this right. And I think that I'm a rotten Christian. Well, I suppose there's a chance you could be a rotten Christian, but I would like to suggest to you that there's, I think, some fundamental confusion about loving God and it being legalism, because there's also a second group of people, and those are the mystical believers. They are the ones that think that love should feel like something. I should have something. That informs me I'm loving God at the moment. Now, whether that's just a high, it's just some sort of warm, fuzzy feeling, whatever the mystical sense it is, I think that reveals some confusion about the love of God. I think the love of God is both similar and dissimilar to human love relationships. It is dissimilar in that it's God. Therefore, our love for God versus people, it's got to be different. Come on, the way you love a dog is different than the way you love your dad. I hope. The way you love ice cream is different than the way you love watching golf on Sunday afternoon uninterrupted, which didn't happen for me. And I didn't get to see Scottie Scheffler win the golf tournament. I'm not bitter about this. There are certain things that you love a certain way and certain things you don't. When it comes to loving God, it's going to be different because it's going to be more transcendent. It's going to be more eternal. It's going to be more intimate. You say, whoa, I thought Eros love was the intimate love. No, that's the sexual love. Obviously, we don't have that with our God. Another way that it's different. It's more intimate, however, in that this is the one who knows you better than you know you. That's hard to imagine, isn't it? What do you mean God knows me better than me? I know me really. No, you don't know yourself the way that you think you do. because the heart is deceitful and wicked. Who can know it? God does. He knows you that intimately, which is why I suspect you talk to God about things you maybe don't share with anybody. Am I right? You talk to God about things very naturally, very freely. It's not like, all right, Lord, I didn't want to tell you this, because you know that he knows. Why? Because he knows you intimately. So your love relationship with God in that regard, it is different than human love, but in many ways, it's very similar. Jimmy, got a question for you.
Okay.
Do you love Mrs. Hicks?
Absolutely.
What does that feel like? Hard. There it is right there.
Hard sometimes. Well, no,
but what? It, right now, you're sitting there.
Right.
Do you love Mrs. Hicks?
Yeah.
Do you got a feeling?
Right this moment, no.
Whoa, then you don't love Mrs. Hicks. But that's exactly what we do with God. Mm. I'm tripping through my day and I stop. Now, this is for maybe the legalistic Christian or the mystical Christian. I stop and realize, whoa, my mind is not on God. I don't have some sort of inner feeling. Oh, no. You don't feel that way about your spouse or your kids, do you? But just because you're not thinking about them and you don't have a warm fuzzy about them at the moment, it doesn't mean that you don't love them. You love them not based on a feeling. It's based on conviction. It's based on knowledge. And furthermore, if you're one of the Christians who think, but it's not the same feeling I used to have. I used to have a different feeling about loving God. I hope that that's actually true. If you've been in the Lord, I don't want to put some sort of arbitrary timeline on it, but if you've been in the Lord for a bit, let's just say 5 years, and I'm just picking a number because I think it's safe, it's going to feel different than the time at the during the season you got saved. In fact, it has to feel different. It should feel different. Jimmy, do you love Mrs. Hicks?
Absolutely.
I'm not done with the sentence yet. Do you love Mrs. Hicks the same way today that you did on your wedding day?
Nope.
Oh, so you don't love her. No, it's a changed love. Mm. It's a different love. When you got married, you were probably just, I'm so excited about this. It's amazing. Where did that feeling go? It went away. And you didn't doubt for a second that you didn't love your wife. Your emotions toward your kids, very simple. When you discovered you were pregnant, you were like, oh, this is awesome. When you had the baby, whoa, this just got us. So didn't you love your baby in the womb? Well, no, I did, but this is, now do you love that baby the same now that that baby is a teenager or 20-year-old? It's like, well, no, I guess I don't. Oh, so you don't love your child. No, that's not true. It's just different. Bingo. Furthermore, if you think that your love relationship with God needs to be a perpetual tingle, oh, you're going to be exhausted. It's unsustainable. Furthermore, if you think that I have to have this like emotive buzz, like, oh, I'm just, oh, I'm on fire, which is the language that gets used at a lot of these concerts, because that's exactly what people go to them for. I got to feel buzzed again. And I'm just telling you, you don't. Now, can you? Sure, it's going to happen. And in that moment, your love for God might just be a little bit more tangible. For instance, you go to the baseball game where your kid is playing. They're down 2 runs. He hits the home run, brings everybody home. And you're just like, oh, my kid! My kid! Do you walk away from there going, hey, I'm not feeling as ecstatic as I was when he hit the home run? No, because that's not sustainable. That's a momentary kind of thing. It's a good thing. Don't get me wrong. They graduate, they get to pass a test, and your heart just kind of fills. You hear that they've done something kind that you didn't know about, and your heart kind of swells. Cool. Does your heart have to stay swollen for you to love them? No, it's an experience. Same thing. You might go to church and hear a sermon. You might listen to a hymn and just go, wow, Lord, I just love you so much. Don't think that that has to be sustained, because it's not sustainable. If you need a mountaintop experience, once you get to the peak, you're going to need a higher mountain. And you get to the peak, you're going to need a higher mountain. All that to say, your love for God is both dissimilar and similar. don't put different criteria on your love with God that leads you to doubt or feel like you're walking in perpetual sin. Now, are there things you can and frankly should do to cultivate that love? Of course there are. The means of growth, you read your Bible, preaching, teaching, you pray, you take Lord's Supper, you fellowship with other believers. Those are all the things that will feed and grow your love for God. But if you happen to be one who really struggles with being loved by God because you're under the impression you don't do anything lovable, or if you think that it just feels like such a burden, I can't be loving God enough. Well, here's something liberating for you. You're right, you can't love God enough. But he loves you anyway. And if you've repented and put your trust in Jesus Christ, you need to have your assurance of your love based on fruit, based on the word, not based on feelings. Because if your Christian walk is a perpetual examination of your feelings, you will forever find sufficient reason to conclude, I don't love God. You're in the family. And he loves you. Question, can you receive that and enjoy that? This is Wretched Radio.
And it's now time for your daily Fortis News Break, a production of Fortis Institute. Verizon has joined the growing exodus from corporate wokeness, officially ending its DEI policies after pressure from FCC Chairman Brendan Carr. The telecommunications giant acknowledged what many have known all along, that some DEI policies and practices could be associated with discrimination. And while common sense returns to the corporate world, Democrat Congresswoman Summer Lee has introduced yet another doomed reparations bill demanding trillions in taxpayer dollars. Lee claims America has stolen black labor, black lives, and black futures for over 400 years until this very day, apparently equating modern conditions with chattel slavery. Meanwhile, the Supreme Court has temporarily blocked President Trump from using the 1798 Alien Enemies Act to expedite deportations of foreign gang members from northern Texas. Only Justices Alito and Thomas dissented from the decision, which essentially delays the removal of criminal aliens from American communities. In Colorado, the governor there, Jared Polis, has signed legislation making truth-telling a crime if it involves someone's gender identity. The new law expands state anti-discrimination statutes to treat dead naming, using someone's actual name, and misgendering, acknowledging biological reality, as illegal discrimination in workplaces, schools, and businesses. And speaking of progressive absurdity, Providence, Rhode Island plans to fly the Palestinian flag at City Hall. Yeah, American officials are voluntarily raising a flag representing a territory largely controlled by Islamic terrorists. A city spokesperson defended the decision by claiming Providence displays many different flags throughout the year to honor diverse background. On a more encouraging note, the FDA is removing prescription fluoride products for children from the market. The agency cited studies linking ingested fluoride to lower IQ, weight gain, thyroid issues, and alter gut microbiomes in developing children. FDA Commissioner Marty Makary emphasized the need to err on the side of safety, while HHS Secretary Robert F. Kennedy highlighted a review of 74 quality studies showing clear associations between fluoride exposure and reduced IQ. And speaking of reduced IQ, in Afghanistan, the Taliban has banned chess, claiming the ancient game violates Islamic Sharia law as a means of gambling, though other Islamic countries have no such prohibition. One cafe owner noted that young Afghans don't have a lot of activities these days, which might explain why leaders would rather restrict harmless games than allow their people to develop strategic thinking skills. And that wraps up today's Fortis News Break. I'm Jimmy Hicks. If you want more, you can download Fortis Plus or sign up to become a Fortis Insider for exclusive daily content. You can do both at FortisInstitute.org. And don't forget, you can subscribe to Fortis News on your favorite podcast app in order to get these updates daily. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.
God has given the church many gifts for the building up of the body. One gift is exhortation, the spiritual ability to encourage, comfort, and admonish God's people. Whether God's people are oppressed, confused, or in error, God has provided the gift of exhortation to comfort, urge, and correct them.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Perhaps somebody shouldn't have cast the first stone. This is Wretched Radio. All right, Jimmy. Busted my chops for preaching a bit of a topical sermon on Sunday at Alpharetta Bible Church. You're preaching this Sunday.
I am.
You're going, can I call it home or is this home now?
Yeah, I'm going back to my hometown.
Okay. Yeah. You want to put it that way?
That's right.
Does it still feel like home?
No. And I don't say that in a bad way, but my life is here now.
Yeah.
But I still love that place. I'll always love it.
So you hate the volunteers?
No, I've always hated them.
I know that. All right. So you're going back to preach.
Yes.
And what is your text, Jimmy?
Galatians 4, 8 to 11.
Uh-huh.
Where we're Todd.
Close enough. I get confused with Paul. That's right. All the time.
Paul is telling the Galatians, basically, why are you going back to elementary things?
Yeah, the basic stuff.
Yeah, I feel like I've labored over you in vain.
Ouch.
Yeah,
because they're going back to working.
That's right.
They're going back to circumcision. Mm-hmm. They're going back perhaps to Jewish rituals, and he wants to liberate them.
Correct.
And you're being inspired for that. What supposed expository sermon is to deliver, because
there's a lot of people being beaten up that I hear, you know, they're being led back to the law, you know, okay,
I know what you're expressing, but this is tricky business. Now, it's not just tricky business for the preacher or teacher, it's tricky business for all of us. Because there is, I think that there's ditches. It's riding the Christian horse that is the challenge when it comes to the issue of sanctification, when it comes to the issue of assurance and obedience. You can easily fall off into a ditch of legalism. It's like, and by the way, a pastor can do that to you. Hey, what's the matter? Why aren't you reading more? Why aren't you studying more? Why aren't you going to church more, giving more? Okay. That's true. But what does that feel like? I think we need to remember when we are preaching to the sheep, which is what church is for, that's just not the way a shepherd treats the sheep. He tries to bring them into a green pasture beside still waters. He tries to reveal to them areas where, hey, this could be something that you're missing out on. And furthermore, I think the reason that so often that we both hear and deliver commands in a way that makes it feel like it's like, I thought Christianity was about liberty, Daddy-O, and this just feels so heavy. I think one of the reasons is because we tend to forget what God's laws are. Do they condemn us when we break them? As an unbeliever, absolutely. But they reflect the character and the nature of God. You want to know what is just, right, perfect, holy, good? Look at the laws of God. That is what the laws show us. So then we got to take another step. So keeping the laws, what should that, I'm going to use the word, feel like? What should that feel like? And I think the preaching that makes it feel like a burden or a heavy lift maybe needs to adjust the way it's presenting those correctives. And it might be that you need to correct the way that you hear those commands, because the commands of the Bible don't go away. They don't go away, which, by the way, is the other ditch we'll get to in just a moment. But the ditch of feeling like, I gotta do. Well, here's the tricky part. You do gotta do. But why should you do the do's that you do? And the answer is because it's the best thing for you. It is the best thing. When I'm telling you, I don't think that there's a Christian who has ever resisted temptation. And afterwards, when the dust settled, the temptation wasn't there, goes, you know, I really wish I had sinned. Because it's the lesser thing. Sin is the lesser thing. Obedience is the better thing. That's what the laws are. the better thing as a mirror, a curb, and a guide. It curbs our behavior so that we don't go off into a land of licentiousness and we find ourselves besmirched and we're the prodigal that's in the pigsty and then we have to return. That's, the law keeps you from that because it's good. The law is good. The law is good if it is used rightly. And I think sometimes some preaching could use some correctives. And I think, Jimmy, that's, you've been hearing the preaching that just makes you feel like you're getting pistol whipped.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it's just more of the, you know, do more, be better. But that's...
But it's true.
Yes.
See, and now but because otherwise you go in the other ditch.
But there's a fundamental misunderstanding with that because we as Christians, we're not, and I'm very careful how I say this, we're not living for Christ. We should be living from Christ.
Okay.
He indwells us now. You know what I mean? We're not.
But no, you can't take away the four. That's there too.
No, it is. But the motivation of why we're doing.
Totally agree.
That's the line I'm trying to draw here.
Totally agree. There's a difference between duty and delight.
Right.
Now, make no mistake about it. God is pleased with duty. That is a better choice than being disobedient. But the preference, if you will, is out of delight. You feel that way too. When your kid does something because you scold them or maybe you threaten them, they do it and it's like, okay. But you come home and they mowed the lawn without you asking. They trimmed and the hedges look, why'd you do that, son? Because I love you, Pop. Oh, yeah. Your heart swells. I think that that's pretty fair comparison.
Yeah, I think if... any spiritual system that's going to make your standing with God depend on your performance, that's just not the gospel.
But see, an individual who preaches sometimes kind of harshly that way would probably affirm what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is tricky.
Yeah.
Because it is very easy then to swing the pendulum onto the other side of the horse. Okay, my illustration just went from pendulum to equine, so I got a little bit goofed up, but... antinomianism. Hey, just rest in God. Just rest, man. Just rest. Now, is that statement wrong? Just rest? And I would say the answer is no, it's not wrong. You do want to rest in God. And in fact, I would even go this far. When you're feeling like your love is not what it should be for God, you need to rest in him because when you are not faithful, he is. When you're unloving, he still loves and you need to rest in that. But that doesn't mean you get to recline and never get out of the lazy boy of love. I really should think about my illustrations a little bit more before I spew them. Be careful that you don't go one to the and ping pong. Don't become a ping pong Christian. I think this is the Christian walk. And I think where so many Christians find themselves sometimes just stagnating, perhaps, is because you fall off on one side and you draw conclusions. Or you fall off on one side, overcorrect, and go to the other side. Legalism and antinomianism are both ditches that you do not want to be in.
Yeah, and I think we do it. Sometimes we're not even led there. I think we just do it because the law feels familiar.
It does. Yeah. I think that was the Galatian problem. They sense, I got to do something here to earn this. We feel that out of our pride-filled heart, but that's not the gospel. The law should drive that out of us. It should crush us. It should kill us. It should help us to understand, no, you can't do it. It has been done for you. The Christian life, it's perhaps, maybe, possibly. Can I put any more contingencies on this? The best takeaway from this is recognize how easy it is to go to one side or the other, but don't think that you've fallen off of the horse, that you're suddenly not saved. It just means, okay, I need a corrective here. That's all I need. That's all. Most times. Now, are there times when somebody might present themselves saying, hey, listen, I've fallen off into the horse of legalism where I'm starting to really think I can work my way into God's favor. Okay, we got a problem. I think that does happen. But I think for the individual who's like, well, I just feel like I need to do something for God to make him happy. okay, you need a corrective. You need a corrective. That Paul was correcting the Galatians in that regard. You think that you're earning it. Now, he did it pretty strongly, especially to those who were promoting the legalistic procedure that they were compelling people to go under the knife to earn God's favor. But I think for most typical Christians, our issue tends to be we just need to be reminded, hey, bro, hey, come on, get back over here. And the same thing is true. If you've maybe gotten lax with your love, pursuing God is the best thing you can pursue. And if you've been negligent in that regard, then you're being lazy and you need to be corrected too. But that doesn't mean that you are condemned. The Christian life, it's just a constant reorienting, just making sure that your compass is right so that you don't fall off of the course. This is Wretched Radio.
Ever feel like you're watching the culture shift beneath your feet? Yeah, you're not alone, and you're not without allies either. At Fortis Institute, we've assembled a powerhouse team of biblical voices to help you navigate these challenging times. From Tim Challies to Brad Bigney to Adam Tyson and Greg Gifford, our fellows deliver daily content that transforms confusion into clarity. Whether you're tackling marriage challenges, parenting questions, or personal growth, Fortis Institute is ready with biblically grounded wisdom. We're not just offering commentary, we're providing a comprehensive toolkit for living boldly in an increasingly complex world. Through our daily podcasts and video content and live events, we're equipping believers to stand firm without wavering. And if you want to be part of something bigger, join the Fortis community today. Visit FortisInstitute.org and discover why thousands are turning to Fortis Institute as their trusted source for biblical wisdom. Because when the world seems to be turning upside down, we remain steadfast. It's Fortis Institute, where we're standing firm and standing together.
For 25 years, Fortis Institute has been building something powerful, a reservoir of biblical truth deep enough to change lives and strong enough to transform churches. But we've realized something very profound. Truth was never meant to be contained. It was meant to flow freely, reaching every single person, every hungry heart, every searching mind, and that's why we're doing something unprecedented. We're breaking the dam. Truth Unhindered isn't just a campaign name, it's our vision for the future. It's about removing every barrier between solid teaching and those who need it the most. We have extraordinary plans for the second half of 2025, but to make this moment possible, we need your partnership now more than ever. Right now, through the end of June, every gift you give will be matched. Your generosity today becomes a flood of truth tomorrow. Just visit FortisInstitute.org/truth right now before June 30th and help us break the dam and let the truth flow unhindered. FortisInstitute.org/truth.
You ever notice how Christians sometimes dance around the J word? You know, judging. Yeah, we've gotten so scared of our culture that we're practically doing spiritual gymnastics trying to avoid it. What if I told you that righteous judgment isn't just some outdated concept? It's actually one of God's greatest gifts to protect His flock. That's why I'm fired up about our new resource, Thou Shalt Judge, with Todd Friel and Justin Peters. It's honestly judging how we judge. Listen, if you're tired of watching your loved ones fall for every wind of doctrine that blows through TikTok, this resource could be an answered prayer. 13 powerful lectures that will revolutionize how you view biblical discernment. Plus, because we love you, there's a free study guide included. It's time to stop tiptoeing and start standing firm. Your family and friends need you anchored in God's Word now more than ever at FortisInstitute.org. That's the Fortis store at FortisInstitute.org. Thou Shalt Judge with Todd Friel and Justin Peters.
Hermeneutics. A vital part of biblical hermeneutics is an understanding of genre. One genre we find in Scripture is narrative. Narratives tell us of real events with real people in real places at a real time. Not everything we read in narratives is condoned by God, but everything we read is part of God working out His plan for the world. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Hey. What are you doing tomorrow? It's not midweek. It's Tuesday. Your calendar should be open for a Fortis Forum. This is Wretched Radio. Dr. Greg Gifford, his book, almost out. Won't it be nice when it comes out? So I can just stop telling you it's coming. And it's actually here. Lies my therapist told me. So helpful. It is going to bring clarity to the Christian church in understanding mental illness, psychotropic medication, what to do with labels. Thoroughly biblical. It'll be out May 27th. You can pre-order it. And you can actually get the audio version. I knew that because I was listening to Greg's Transform podcast yesterday and he mentioned it. He was talking about religious scrupulosity. And I want him to do about 20 more programs on that. Because I think it is a massive issue inside of the church. What he delivered in the one episode was like, give me more. That's how good the Transform podcast is. And he was talking about the audio version of the book. So he must have spent hours reading the book, hours, so that you can listen to it. So whatever your vehicle is for downloading awesome biblical counseling content, you can find the book at fortisinstitute.org/lies. He's doing a it's not a webinar. We don't call it a webinar anymore because it's not a webinar. Well, a webinar is a different thing.
Right.
Keep up with the lingo, daddy. Oh, you need to be hip about all of these technological things.
Give me the deets.
Does it sound that bad? I've been using that so much lately and it's like, wow, does that sound dorky? Here's the deets. On the Fortis Forum, not a webinar. Just go to FortisPlus.org. No, Fortis Instant. Where did we?
Fortis Plus.
Yeah, Fortis Plus. That's what I said. FortisPlus.org. It's absolutely free. Life without the numb. What to do about psychotropics, mental health diagnoses. It's going to be skimming the surface of his book. By the way, we've got another 10 series lecture called Life Without the Numb with Greg Gifford. Here's a little secret for you. Coming in the future, I don't know if I've told you this, but we want to close the store and stop selling stuff. Doesn't that just sound ludicrous? No, it sounds delightful to me. It sounds joyful to me. We want to stop selling stuff. Now, we've got a match campaign going on right now called Truth Unhindered. We want to get our resources. We give at least 90% of our stuff away, but that other 10% are our bigger resources. We continue to sell for the funding of the ministry. We just want to stop that, but that's why we've got this Truth Unhindered campaign going on so that you can, well, help us give stuff away. Sorry for the crude language. We've got to replace that revenue from store sales. And we are hoping that the generosity of God's people will fill that gap so we can give it away and go on an aggressive campaign to find churches around the globe and just get that stuff pumped in there. And thank you if you've contributed to that. It's a match campaign. Every dollar you give, it gets doubled. You can do that transaction at Fortis Institute, not Fortis Plus, fortisinstitute.org/truth, which is different than the book, which is /lies. Now that's kind of ironic. We got that going on. Hey, you know what that means? Oh, I think that's a God moment. You know what?
A God wink.
Oh man, Scylla. Right now, I'm what do they call it? A hobby horse. When you kind of get an issue and it's just like, you just got to bang this thing. The purity of the gospel and just cleaning up our evangelical lingo. We put out a video last week and it was walking through a gospel presentation at one of these events that purports to have thousands of people getting saved and baptized. Do we want that? We absolutely do. I notice there's a lot of chatter these days. There's a revival going on around the globe and in America and on the campuses. Well, I want that. I really do. Wouldn't that be awesome to watch? Even from preachers that you're maybe not nuts about, they're just not your particular cup of tea. It's like, cool, man. People are getting saved everywhere and they are getting baptized publicly. They jump into a fountain in downtown Philadelphia. They just want to get baptized. We'd all rejoice at that, but we want to make sure that we are indeed able to rejoice. Because the gospel is being rightly presented without the lingo, without the baggage, without all the jargon, and without all of the assumptions. That's what that video was about. We assume too much when we present the gospel. And we assume that people understand what sin is, the consequences of sin, if those things are not explained, people, you know, they might be like Frank Sinatra and they have some regrets, but too few to mention. They just, okay, yeah, I made some decisions. I wish I hadn't done it, kind of hurt my family. Well, that ain't sorrow over sin. Sorrow over sin is because it's an offense against God. And if we're not explaining the judicial nature of the gospel, I don't think we're explaining it at all. Now, the trick for us is because we know the gospel, we can hear a gospel presentation and go, oh, there it is. Yeah, okay, there. Etch a sketch your brain. Pretend you don't know any of those things and see if it makes sense. And most times, it doesn't. And I don't know why we are so accepting of subpar gospel presentations. This is the core. This is the basics. This would be like going to the mechanic and saying, can you change my oil? And he describes it, but he doesn't seem to know. It's not entirely everything that encompasses an oil change. You'd be like, I think I'm going to go down the street. Why do we give so many pastors a pass when they aren't presenting the gospel rightly? Well, they could get, you know, let's not be so nitpicky. They could get saved. Yeah, they could. But come on. We expect people to answer questions rightly on a test. Otherwise, what do? Well, we used to give red marks and, you know, give them lower grades. But that was before postmodernism and the self-esteem movement kicked in. But we understand that there is, it needs to be at a certain level for it to be truthful and to be accurate and to be right. We just have to get better at that with the gospel. And furthermore, I would say this, there is a difference between apologizing the gospel and presenting the gospel. Apologetics serve a presentation on the gospel. You and I aren't supposed to be apologists per se. You say, well, wait a second, aren't we supposed to be ready to give a reason for the hope that lies within us? Yes, we are. As we share with them and present the gospel to them, they ask questions, we'll defend it, we'll answer those questions, but that's different than presenting the gospel. Let me see if I can make up an example of what I'm talking about here, because I do believe that this is important, because I've even seen this with people's comments about these presentations online where it's like, hey, look at the gospel was presented. No, the gospel was explained. The gospel was defended against inquisitors of the gospel, but it wasn't proclaimed. So a difference would be something like, so you're telling me that God thinks that we're like totally depraved? And the apologist would say, well, let's just take a look at some of the evidence. Look at World War II. Look at the atrocity of those people. I can't use the N-word because that gets you in trouble on the internet machine. See, that's what we're capable of. And you go, well, okay, they explained it. Now, but that's defending the gospel, if you will, at least the doctrine of total depravity. But that's different. An explanation of a doctrine or the gospel is different than declaring it. Paul reasoned with people from the scriptures. It's the word dialegomai. He talked them through it. He didn't. It wasn't like, okay, I'm not sure you're going to get this because you can't see it. But defending the gospel, apologizing for the gospel, it's doing it like this. I'm telling you that the gospel is really reasonable because justice is super important. We all appreciate justice. This is defending the gospel. This is presenting the gospel. You're leaning in and you're pressing. Total depravity. You better believe we are totally depraved. I know you must be something really unique because I know my own wicked heart. Let's just open up the cavity, the recesses of your heart and see what is lurking there. What do we find? Lying and lusting and cheating, sexism, racism, angry thoughts about people. Look at that. That's, dude, you got the same problem I've got. We're totally depraved. And what must a holy God do with totally depraved sinners? He must punish. We want that. The problem is we qualify for that. Would you like some great news? Jesus saves us from that. He, if you will, became totally depraved for us, that we might receive his righteousness and be forgiven by God, that he would look upon totally depraved sinners and rescue us and justify us and adopt us and ultimately glorify us. Why don't you want to follow that God? That's presenting the gospel. There's a difference. We've got to get this thing right. So I fear I might be riding that hobby horse for a bit. Until tomorrow, go serve your king.